overflowing with love. I am overflowing with happiness. I am filled with the power to make a change, to create a brand new life.
Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center for Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
And I think we'll be doing this for a while. It's February, the first Sunday in February, and this month, because it is February, I'll be speaking about love. And it's a subject that I cherish. And if you give yourself to love, love will give itself to you. So join with me as we ponder this most amazing force in the universe, which is what each one of us is, and to try to discover it with fresh eyes. I was looking in our classroom this morning and someone brought all these pillows in. They have the Serenity Prayer and This Is the Moment. And then there was a quote from Emerson on one of the pillows. It had a big wise owl on the pillow and it says, "What lies before us and what lies behind us is irrelevant to what lies within us." So could we find that love that lies within us? An easy way to access it, the Sufis do this heart meditation where they invite you to image in your mind's eye somebody or something that you dearly love. My beloved Tia sent me a text this morning. Her dog Blue is making her transition. And I remember the Sunday that Jody Rutenberg brought Blue in. Blue has blue eyes. It's a white dog. And Tia fell instantly in love with this foster that Jody was taking. And by the end of that Sunday, Seamus acquiesced, and Blue was in the back seat of that car. And Blue has been her devoted pet for a decade now. And Blue is making her transition, but the love that Blue is will never leave. And so if you can image an object of love, let's say Blue in this case, and then see the object dissolve in the mind's eye, but then feel that love that's still there, that will never leave. And that's a simple way, but a very profound way, to enter into that field of love. Rumi says, "All swimming in the ocean of love ends in drowning." Sounds like a harsh metaphor. But what he's really saying is when we step into that ocean of love, it's not me and the ocean, it is just the ocean of love. And as we drown, as we let go of the idea that we're separate from that ocean, then that's all that exists. And then we can have loss in this life, and we will have loss. People will come into our lives and go out of our lives. Pets will come into our lives and go out of our lives. But yet the love endures. The love is eternal. And so this Sunday we're going to explore the gift of love, the many gifts of love, realizing that it is a gift, but a gift doesn't mean anything unless it's received. So could we receive the gift of our own being, our own true nature, and then rest as that? It's so simple and yet so profound. We're sitting here in a room, in the silence of our being, reflecting on love as it comes in form, and yet as it really exists in the invisible realm, beyond form. And we notice how it's very nurturing energy, this love. It's a nurturing energy. In a strange sort of way, it's holding us. We're held in the hands of grace, forever safe in the arms of love. And so as we rest as that love, as Ernest Holmes would say, this love sees only love. And only love sees love. In the book of John, it says, God is love. And so when we are loving, we are being godlike. I turned the calendars over at the center today. We have calendars in every bathroom, in the youth church, in the bookstore. And each one, as I turned over, there was an animal looking at me. The one in the bookstore was a little pussycat, and she's leaning up against a dog that's like Michael's dog, and the cat's head is on the head of the dog, and the cat's purring, and the dog is looking kind of with a desperate look like, what is this putting her head on my face right now? And yet you feel the vibration of love between these two seemingly not loving critters, and yet there is love there. So could we open to the surprise of love and see it all as a gift, coming to allure us into its web, the web of love. So when you're ready to play with me in the field of unconditional love and acceptance, open your eyes. So nice to see everyone out there. This is February. February is the month of love. We have Valentine's Day. And it's interesting, I was straightening up around the center this morning when I got here, and I found an old VHS cassette tape. You remember the old VHS ones that you put in? And it was dated February 2001. So it would have been 20 years ago this month. And it was Sadhguru Jaggi Vasudev speaks here at the Center for Spiritual Living. And I remember that Saturday that the Sadhguru came and the place was packed and we were sitting on the floor and he came in with the rules, because Sadhgurus have rules. You have to enter in silence. Once he begins, nobody can enter. You can't come waddling in like y'all do on Sunday mornings. No, once the doors are closed, they're closed. And once they're closed, the rule was nobody's allowed to leave. So as soon as he made that rule, a woman in the front row, kind of an obstinate, dangerously spontaneous, hey, darling, come on in. She just, when he says you can't go, she says, watch me. And she went right out. And I realized, aren't rules strange things? We create rules, and then we lovingly break them. I broke my own rule of taking off my mask just long enough so that I could do a talk for you, even though you probably could hear me without the mask. Sometimes it's nice to see a smile in a world where we haven't been able to see many smiles. And love comes through the smile. Have you noticed that? We do these Zoom calls, and we have this gallery, and all these faces are up there, and I'm always looking at myself thinking, what's that smiling face doing there? And it's always my face. I don't know how to not smile. It's just what I am. And maybe it's because I study with Thich Nhat Hanh, and he taught the alchemy of the smile. And he says the Buddha has a little gentle smile on the Buddha's face, and that's the smile of the beloved within you. So could we access that smile, that knowing smile, and let it not be something we do, but something we are? So I'm having fun this month playing in this field of love, and there was a book that Glory G gave me. It arrived in our bookstore as a gift, and she said, you'd probably like this, and the book is just called Love, and it's a compilation of maybe 50 of some of the greatest spiritual people on the planet, from His Holiness the Dalai Lama to Khalil Gibran to, oh gosh, Michael Finkelstein, whoever he is, Albert Einstein, Anita Barjani, Yogi Amrit Desai, and they're all talking about this power of love. They have the heart math people in here. I studied with the heart math people. That's a science, by the way. And you know, science and love are not at odds in this world. In fact, the essay from Albert Einstein is so beautiful because he talks about, could we harness the energy of love that we all are and send it out into the universe? So he said E equals MC squared would not be the equation for nuclear weapons once you change the energy of love moving out. Love times the force of light doubled will create this radiating light energy of love. And so, so throughout this book, there's going to be little moments where he talks about love. And I'll, let me just give you Robert Adams. Robert Adams was this enlightened teacher from India. And he's one of Gloryji's favorites. And he talks about love as what we are. And so they asked Robert Adams, what is love? And Robert Adams says, love, happiness, peace, joy are your true nature. It's so funny. Terry was reading me something from the class that we're teaching, and it was about the peace. And she says, nothing in the world can give you that peace because that peace is what you are. Joy is not something you can get when people behave and or act this way. Joy is what you are. Now, happiness can be conditional. I'm happy when you smile at me. But joy is something that we naturally, it's our true nature. So he's saying, love, happiness, peace, joy are all our true nature. It's a feeling beyond feeling. And he says, it is a total ineffable something that we all are. Ineffable means you can't describe it. In the science of mind, Dr. Ernest Holmes says, all is love and all is law. Pretty simple, isn't it? And he says, let the love lead the way, and then the law will make the way possible. So when have you allowed the love that you are, your true nature, lead the way? In your relationships, in your work, in your home environment, in your way of serving in the community? Could we let love lead the way? Not guilt, not I should do this, but a love that is born out of a calling of the soul. You know, I remember when I was 25 years old and I was totally lost. I had done everything with my life. I'm in San Francisco. I'm watching a musical from New York City called A Chorus Line, and I'm way up in the balcony, and I see this little tiny dancer on the stage singing, God, I'm a dancer, and a dancer dances. Give me somebody to dance for. Give me some place to fit in. All I ever needed was the music and the mirrors and the chance to dance for you. Well, in that holy instant, love for dance awoke in my heart, and at age 25, I went back to graduate school at San Jose State University, majoring in dance, only to realize that the love of the dance took me into spirituality, because it was on the dance floor where I discovered that all movement came from some other source. It didn't come from me, and that led me into an exploration of the anatomy of inspiration. Where does inspiration come from? So that spark of love led the way, and then the law brought me here. Who would have thought that that one moment of hearing a singer singing about how she is a dancer would take me into ministry? But it did. He said, it makes you know that you are one with everything, and everyone is your brother and sister, including the flowers and the trees, the pussycats and the puppy dogs, the animals, the bed bugs, oh dear, the cockroaches and the mountains. He did say cockroaches, didn't he? The sky, the sick people, the healthy people, the poor people, and the rich people. And when you can look at everyone, everyone, and know that they are not different from you, then you truly are in love, that it's all you. Huh. Wheresoever I look, I see the face of God. So could we know that everything truly is this divine presence looking back at us? And when we know ourselves as love, love will see it's all us. So this is the invitation. This is the gift to know ourselves as something so much greater than a skin encapsulated ego that feels love for another human being, some special human being. You know, in the Course in Miracles, they warn you against what they call special love. Because if you make one person the source of that love, and that one person leaves, well, then you're bereft, because they were the source of love. But they're not the source of love. Love is what you are. And when that love awakens, then you don't have special love. Everyone is special. And then love becomes an ordinary thing. You know, every kitty cat is your kitty cat. Anne Marie will appreciate this. We were walking our old dog, Bert, and he's 15 years old now, and he's set in his ways. It's hard for him to move his back hips, but every now and then he gets his prance on. And our neighbor lets their cat hang in and out, and this cat was lying in the middle of the street on her back. And Bert saw the cat, and he remembered Smudge, and he went over and started sniffing the cat, and before you know it, the cat's putting her paws up and playing with Bert's big old head, and he's having a gay old time playing with this kitty cat in the middle of the street. And I said to Trey, I said, should we allow this to go on? He says, well, what's the problem, David? Bert and the cat are having a thing going in the street. And you know, and then, so we called Bert, and he went, and the cat ran back in its yard. So much for the dance. He said, true love never changes. It doesn't go away. because it never came from anywhere. It's just something that is, and you are that. True love doesn't go anywhere. Yesterday I was going through my books looking for things on love, and I found the book by J. Allen Boone called Letters to Strongheart. And it's a true story written by a mystic about a dog that he had a love affair with. And Strongheart was a famous dog in the 19-teens and 20s in the silent movies. He was a world-famous star in silent movies like Rin Tin Tin. And you've seen him. He's the German Shepherd. And well, in the book, Strongheart dies. And J. Allen Boone, who was very close to Strongheart, he does this beautiful testimony. He says, "You cannot tell me that Strongheart, the most famous dog in the world, is dead. Because what Strongheart was for me was my friend, was my companion, was my trusted lover, was the one that would never leave me." And he says, those qualities don't die. He says, they endure. So yes, the form of Strongheart is gone, but the love that he is never went anywhere. And that's what Robert Adams is saying. This love doesn't go anywhere. Could we know ourselves as that eternal love? And he concludes this. He says, love is an absolute freedom. It's without any attachment whatsoever. So yeah, he was attached to the form of Strongheart, but the love that Strongheart is never went anywhere. And he's saying that, you know, it cannot die. Love gives, it never takes. Love is letting everything alone, not judging anybody or anything. Love is allowing it to unfold in its own inimitable way. And this is what love is. It unfolds within us. It is the gift that's been planted at the core of our being. And if we touch it, and if we see it out there, they're awakening it within us. And then after a while, everybody becomes your lover. Because it's not just that one special love, that one special person, that one special pup. They're all your lovers. Years ago, Gigi and I and Trey were invited. Well, I was invited to go on a Sufi journey. And he says, you can bring two friends. No, I think he said three. So I invited Gigi, I invited Trey, and I invited Frankie Timmers. Gigi remembers this. And the four of us were invited to go on a Sufi journey to follow the path of Mevlana Rumi. Jalaluddin Mevlana. Mevlana Jalaluddin Rumi. And it was, we were doing zikrs. Allahu, Allahu, Allahu. We were doing sobets where you would sit with a master teacher and he would do this transmission of love. And then we would see these holy sites like the Hagia Sophia and the Blue Mosque. And the men would come in and we'd supplicate on our things and we'd be doing these prayers. And the women would be stuck in a little cubicle in the back. And I says, why do they segregate the men and the women? He says, well, the men are far bigger sinners than the women. So the men need the full. I thought, this is a line you're telling me. The women are second-rate citizens is what I'm seeing. And you stick them in a closet and the men get the big cathedral. But I'm not going to say anything because, you know, we Americans have to keep our mouths shut in those environments. But my beloved husband went along with this pilgrimage of love, supposedly, a pilgrimage of love. And he kept finding fault with the Sufis. He says, because he says, we would be in Ephesus and it would be a hot blazing day. These are ruins, thousands of years old. And the cats would be coming down from the ruins and they were thirsty. And we're all carrying our bottled water. And I remember putting water in a little cap and the cats drinking the water. They were so thirsty. And he says, all you spiritual people, you care more about yourselves than you do about the animals. So all of a sudden, Trey, from the calling in his soul, decided his purpose was to water the animals in Istanbul. And Gigi knows this. Everywhere he went, he'd be pouring water bowls for dogs, water bowls for cats. And he did it because his soul said, I'm not separate from you. I'm not separate from you. That we're connected. It was Walter Starkey, a friend of mine. He also spoke here at the center, and he wrote a book called The Double Thread. And the double thread came from Jesus. He came from the Christian background. Remember, Jesus says there's only two rules: to love God with all your heart and all your soul and all your might. That's the first one. And the second one is to love your neighbor as yourself. But Walter Starkey said Jesus prioritized it. The first one is to love this power, we'll call it love itself, with all your heart and all your soul and all your might, this invisible something that includes us all. And then love your neighbor as yourself. That's the gift of, or the work of being human. So in Locke Kelly's wonderful book, Shift into Freedom, he delineates these aspects of consciousness and he says, the first work is the work of being love. This presence, awakening in time and space. You know, to be or not to be. Can you be that? Tatwamasi, thou art that. Thou art the love of the universe. So that's the work of being. The second work is the work of being human, or the second double threat, to love your neighbor as yourself. When you become human, then this love that's universal has this finite form that it can express through. And then the love of David can love the love in Michael, and the love in David can love the love in Shannon, and it ripples out. And you don't diminish yourselves by sharing that love. It potentiates itself. When two or more are gathered in that vibration, I am there, and it potentiates itself. So that's the work of being human. And then the next work is the work of love. And that's what we're going to look at today, the work of love. What is the work of love in the world when you know you are that? It's more than just being human. It's serving at a higher level, to serve the love. And you know, when I studied with the Sufis, I realized they say when you serve the one, when you serve the love itself, then the love serves you in ways that you can't even imagine. So could we open to the mystery of what that would look like in our lives? You know, we have our Dharma recovery group. That's a service of love. You know, to create a space where people can come and where they can be heard and be seen and be validated. And to know that it's really love. It's a holding space of love. It's not a place where I'm going to tell you how to get your life straight and give you all this unsolicited advice. No, it's a space of love where we can be nurtured and held, and then we can unfold, as Robert Adams said, unfold as that, whatever that would look like in your life. So could we make a commitment? And that's one of my favorite words, commitment. I did a sermon years ago called The Power of Commitment, and my friend, who was my sponsor at the time, I was a new minister. You had sponsors that are older ministers, and he had a horrible time making commitments. He'd never been able to be in a committed relationship, and he couldn't stay in one church for long. He church shot all over the place. And so he listened to my talk on the power of commitment over and over again, trying to find out, how do you do that? Well, it comes from the Latin word comitare. Comitare means to circle around one thing that you really care about. Like Terry is committed to Mary, and Mary is committed to Terry. So there's this commitment. But what if we could do the big commitment? We could commit to the love that we are, the love that doesn't know other. Could we make a commitment to marry ourselves, to marry the love that we are? Well, that's a big one. That's crazy, David. Are you asking us to marry the love that we are? Yeah. Could you make a commitment to that love that you are and let it lead the way? If it's taking you to El Paso, let it take you to El Paso. You know, if it takes, if the relationship go to two other sides of the world, the love doesn't go anywhere. The love is still there. So could we make a commitment to this love that even when we're apart, the love isn't apart? You know, and then it's a whole different way of seeing this. Then we're loving dangerously, as my friend Terry would say. We're loving dangerously. Dangerous because we're not trying to possess it or control it or manipulate it or understand it. I remember my friend Robert Tom over there, he was in one of my classes once, and he talked about the languages of love in a psychological perspective, like each one has their language of love. And I'm always the consummate student of truth. I wanted to find out what my language was. I guess my language is I want somebody fully present with me. My partner's language of love is he wants to be validated and affirmed. Some people's languages of love, they want you to give them things. But I realized a language of love is fine to understand, but does love really have a language that can be specific? Or is it a state of beingness, to being the love that we are, and it has a way of unfolding itself which is unique to each encounter? And then it gets so deliciously unconcretized. It's a mystery, and it's fun, and we get to play with it. So I taught a class called Shift into Freedom here, and it's all about being free in the love that we are. And Lok Kelly, this kind of Tibetan Buddhist guy who doesn't seem very loving, he wove that thread, that gift of love, in his unique way by talking about the four levels of consciousness. And he says the first level, or the four levels of the mind, the first level of the mind is just the conscious mind that just thinks. And you know, we all have that, thoughts and beliefs, and we operate that. And we think we're our thoughts. And until the second level of mind awakens, and he calls it an awake awareness, then you realize that we are this awareness that is beyond thought. And the second aspect of mind awakens. And you look kind of confused. So I'll give you an example. Notice your right big toe and lift it up and down, your right big toe. It's aware that it's a toe. It doesn't think that it's different than the left big toe. Now let the left big toe go up and down. Now the left big toe has awareness and the right big toe has an awareness, but they're not thinking thoughts, are they? And so when you know yourself as an awake awareness, it's always there, behind thought, behind concept, behind belief, behind the pain body, behind the ego, there is this awake awareness that is always there, and that's what we are. That was the third level of the mind. The second level I failed to talk about was this witness self, where we begin to witness our thoughts. We realize I'm the observer of the thoughts. I'm the observer of the no-see-me's. You know, I'm not the one reacting to the no-see-me's. I'm witnessing myself reacting. And this is the witness self. And if you've ever had a yoga class, you witness your body on the mat. You witness your breath going in and out. You witness your emotions arising and falling. And this is a gift, another gift of love, awakening within us, so that we might navigate without a reaction, but we can witness ourselves reacting. You know, my crazy husband who likes to water animals in Turkey, he also is trying to save the trees. And it's a passion that he has, almost to a fault. And we have this one man who's moved into our neighborhood, and he came over to thank us for having such a beautiful yard. And he informed us that he and his wife were buying up a lot of the homes in Five Points to turn them into investment properties and were to make the neighborhood more profitable and to really fix up these old dilapidated houses. But he has one tendency. He cuts all the trees down. And so for the last 3 days, one of his rental properties had huge pines and pecan trees and tulip poplars, and we thought they were trimming up the trees, but after 4 days, every single tree has come down, and my beloved husband is living in reaction. I can witness it and know that this is not a surprise. You know, what Donald Trump does isn't a surprise, and what this man does isn't a surprise. He basically doesn't like trees. And so he'll buy a house, cut them down, buy a house, cut them down. In the meantime, Trey is having a hissy fit about the trees. And so the fourth level of awareness, the fourth level of the mind, I don't think Trey has gotten there yet, but it's called open-hearted awareness. And that's the most evolved part of the mind. When you move from the thinking mind to the witnessing mind to the aware mind and then to the loving, open-hearted mind. Then you touch each moment with compassion. Now, he had that open-hearted awareness when he was traveling through Turkey with the dogs and the cats. But with this man with the trees, you know what he wants to do with that man with the trees? He wanted to... Anyway, I won't tell you. And but we're all doing the very best we can with what we are. So what would love do? You know, what would love do? There's a lovely book by Jeff Foster. It's called Falling in Love with Where You Are. We have a poster in our bookstore that says the obstacle is the way. So could we fall in love with the obstacle? Could we fall in love with the problem? Could we fall in love with the darkness? And find the gift of love, that open-hearted awareness, even in the most painful times? And Jeff Foster was a teacher at a time in my life, right after the heart attack, when all this unhealed stuff started coming up for me. And it had to be met with love, not with shame or judgment. You know, when we have these unskillful parts of ourself, are we going to shame them and judge them? Oh, there you are, you stupid fool. You haven't learned anything all these years. Or are we going to say, ah, here you are reacting again to the cutting down of the trees. I know that hurts your heart. Could I be compassionate and loving to that part of me that's in reaction, that's experiencing Shempa? And so this is what love would say to you when you're really having a bad day. Because this gift of love, and it's the lover within us that's talking to us. And I love how he lets the love within speak. So this is the loving promise from within yourself. This love says, I'll always be there for you. I'll never leave you or forsake you. Even when you're really down and out. And he says, I will always listen deeply to you. I'm sure this is what the Dharma Recovery says. But I will never try to fix you. I will never try to mend you or stop you from feeling what you're feeling or give you a secondhand memorized answer. That's not what I do. I will never pretend to be the one who has all the answers and knows, to be the enlightened one, or some missionary for some conceptual truth so far removed from real time, immediate, first-hand, present experience. I'm not going to preach to you the scriptures. He says, I will not get into your drama with you either. I will not indulge and feed your stories or your mental conclusions or your fears. I will not mistake who you are for my story about you or my dream of who you are. Huh. In that way, we respect where they are instead of dragging them into our belief about them. I shared this last Sunday in church, and this is for parents, that unsolicited advice to your kids is an act of violence. We're not here to give them advice. We're here to, in a way, invite them to discover ways to be more skillful in their navigating. So he's saying the same thing. But friend, I will meet you in the fires of hell. This is what love will do. And I will hold your hand while you're there. I will walk with you as far as you need to walk. And I will not turn away when things get dicey. For you are myself. And in the deepest recesses of our experiences, we are intimately each other, and we cannot pretend otherwise. You know, Gigi and Raul are going through some health things together. They're not separate. And what happens to him happens to her. What happens to her happens to him. This is February. And it was a year ago, almost to the day, that I got up on Sunday morning. It was the Sunday before Valentine's Day, and that's what this is. I got up. Trey was in New York City with his two sisters. We still had Susan at the time. And they were doing a family thing, which they do in February. His birthday's in February. And that Sunday, I got up getting ready for the church, and I take the dogs to the backyard, and my pug falls over while he's lifting his leg, urinating, and he couldn't get up. And I didn't know. I had to come and do what I do here. And so I carried him in the car, and Jody Rutenberg came that Sunday, and she scooped him up and took him to the emergency room. And I finished doing the service, and I found out after the service that he'd had a herniated disc and that he was paralyzed from the neck down. And that was a year ago, almost to the day. And I didn't know what to do. I couldn't fix him, but just like Jeff Foster, I could lie with him on the floor and I could talk to him. He couldn't eat or drink, so I took a little dropper and I would take CBD oil and water, thinking that that had magical powers. Somehow someone told me it did, and it didn't. But I'd do anything at that stage. And I gave him little pain medications. He couldn't eat, but he loves little pieces of turkey. So I would take a little piece of turkey and take a pain pill in the turkey, like a little ravioli, and I'd put it in his mouth, and he would swallow it. So for 3.5 days, I lay on the floor talking to a paralyzed pug who had the surgery. And on Valentine's Day, the best news was that he survived the surgery. They had to cut through his throat and do something with his neck where the herniated disc was. And he had to learn to walk again. He had to learn to pee again, to poop again, to get in the positions again. And yesterday, he ran down the street. That little pug with one eye came running down the street. It's like a miracle. And I find myself tearing up just thinking about a year ago, he couldn't walk, and now he's running. That little guy. And so, he says, if you feel confused, then feel confused, he says, right now. And if you feel frightened, well, feel frightened right now. I was frightened a year ago, you know. If you are bored, let's get profoundly bored together. And if you're burning with rage, well, let's burn together a while and see what happens. Let's not make any emotion wrong, you know. It's all okay. And then he says, and when we break the mold, he says, interrupt the outdated pattern. Sometimes we go through this to break a pattern in ourselves. You know, I used to have the idea that I could fix, that I could take care of Humphrey. I couldn't take care of him. All I could do was love him as he journeyed through that dark period where he couldn't move. And you know, it was so funny. The one requirement that they said before they did the surgery was I was there to help him urinate and have his bowel movements. Well, how do you get a paralyzed dog to urinate and have bowel movements? And so then the doctor said, you have to squeeze his bladder. Well, he couldn't move. So I would get a friend like Anne-Marie. She'd hold him up, or I'd hold him up. And then someone was down there squeezing that bladder and squeezing that bladder and squeezing that bladder. I couldn't get a drop out of him. I was desperate. I got in the car crying with the pug on the back seat. I stopped at a stoplight. The pug fell to the floor. I'm screaming, oh my God, I've killed the pug. He's on the floor. He's making his strange sounds. I get to the emergency room. I carry him in. I said, I can't get my dog to pee. Can you help me? There was nobody there to help me. So Trey's on the phone. He says, go home. Just go home. Stop making a drama out of this. He wasn't in that open-hearted awareness place with me. Anyway, sometimes It breaks an outdated pattern in you, and it makes the unexpected commitment to dignify our present experience by radically connecting with what's really here. To connect with what's really here without judging it or pushing it away. Perhaps then great healing is possible as love grows and you embrace everything on your path. And sometimes the things you have to embrace are the things that you can't fix, and yet you're not going to turn away. So, strangely enough, that was one of the most blessed times in my life when I, you know, not that I would wish you with your child to ever go through something, but sometimes when you don't know what to do and all you can do is be present, that's enough. To just be present with what is. And then we breathe our way through it, right, Raul? We breathe our way through it. We take the next step. And we know that God's grace is sufficient and God's grace pours itself into us when we invite it in. Yeah, so we're going to be looking at the gifts of love this month, and I invite you to inquire, perhaps get a journal out, and ask yourself, when does love awaken within? How might I make a commitment to that love and serving? To see a father and their child here is so dear to me. You know, it reminds me of my own dad and how he used to take me to the baseball games, and I asked too many questions. He said, "You asked too many questions, Scotty." He called me Scotty. I didn't understand sports too well as a little boy. I was, you know, I understood paper dolls more than I did sports, but he didn't understand that. But we did our best, Dad and me, to try to bond in that own way that we do with our dads. And so love awakens in its own unique way if each of us can have the wisdom to not make something wrong and something right. You know, what if the perils of Humphrey last year were exactly what the soul needed to find a deeper love? You know, not something that was filled with joy, but something that was filled with concern and fear literally took me to a depth of love that wasn't about fixing or making something wrong, but a love that helped me navigate through those times. My beloved Tia and Shay are going through this time right now with their beloved Blue, and you know, I think of the times when I've been with my animals and they have made their transition. What a sacred time that was. You know, little Smudge, when she made her transition, Gigi helped bring her back, I don't know how many times, from near-death experiences. But at the final time, Gigi rushed over. She had a special potion that she would put down. I think it was tuna juice and a bunch of other things. And Smudge finally made her decision. I'm not coming back. This is my final dance. And Gigi said goodbye to her. And then I watched this little cat move to find her place where she was going to make her transition. And she decided she was going to move to baby Speck's bed. Speck had by now died. And so there is Smudge lying on the bed, probably smelling the fragrance of the dog that she loves so dearly. And she made her transition on the very bed where the dog that she loved used to sleep. And when she made her transition and I was holding her and stroking her neck, she was down to maybe 5 pounds. And the love was so palpable. She was so weak, she could lift her little head, and she did a little purr. And then she just left. And I thought, what a sacred little time we had. She was there with me. She knew she was loved. And I took baby Speck's towel that she would sleep on. It had a black sheep, and there were 5 white sheep. We called it the black sheep towel. And so that was baby Speck's towel that she slept on. So I rolled Smudge up in Speckle's towel, and I carried her out to the garden. And I had already dug the hole. It was already ready. And I put her in the hole, and I put Speckle's toy with her. So she had a little friend there. And I said a few words, and I covered her, and I put a little statue of the cat over her. And I threw some seeds of columbine that I'd whales that I had that were, and I threw those columbine seeds. So now in the spring, I'm expecting these purple columbines to come up over her little grave where she's there. And I see it every day, and I feel the love that never went anywhere. So what if we get to do that work with each other during these times, these trying times? My friend Adam was telling me this morning, a high school friend of his, he went to bed one night, he was 39 years old, and he had a heart attack in his sleep. Just this week. None of us knows, you know, when that time is going to happen. So could we be mindful that every moment is grace, that we're here on this planet, and to find every moment is sacred, especially with this COVID thing around. None of us knows when that could, you know, out of the night, just affect any of us. I wanted to read you a poem on love, because it moved me so deeply when I read it. And it's about how love is holding all of us. Love is holding Smudge. Love is holding Humphrey a year ago. Love is holding me right now. Love is holding all you all. during these times when we don't know. You know, we're in a very I don't know time in our country. You know, we have an impeachment hearing tomorrow, I believe. We have children on the border that we're trying to unite with their parents. We have a pandemic that's morphing in our world. All kinds of stuff's going on. Could we not fall into that conscious mind that reacts, but could we move into an open-hearted awareness where we can access this love and let it guide us through these dangerous times and then pray dangerously? Not carefully, but live dangerously from that peace and from that possibility that's moving us forward. And Mark Nepo wrote a little poem called Acceptance, and he called it The Work of Love. And here's his poem, and I invite you to take this into your hearts, and then I'll do a little closing meditation. He says, yes, it's true, I confess. I have thoughts, great thoughts, and I've sung great songs. All of it as a rehearsal for the simple majesty of being held by love. All of it a rehearsal for the simple majesty of being held by love. And he says, the dream is awakened when thinking that I love you. And life begins when I can say I love you. And joy moves like blood when embracing others with that same love. Joy flows like blood when embracing others with this love. He says, my efforts now turn from trying to outrun suffering. My efforts turn from trying to outrun suffering instead to accept love wherever I find love. To accept it wherever I find it. Stripped of causes and plans and things to strive for, I have discovered everything that I could need or ask for is right here already. It's here in its own flawed abundance. In own flawed abundance. I'm the richest person I know. I've got this beautiful center here with a homeless guy outside, you know, with old plants that need some help, with old friends that are still here after all these years. Flawed abundance, and I cherish every moment of it. And he goes on to say, we cannot eliminate hunger, but we can learn to feed each other. We cannot eliminate loneliness, but we can actually hold one another. We cannot eliminate pain, but we can live a life of compassion. Ultimately, we are small living things awakening in the stream of life, not gods who carve out rivers. We're humble expressions of life. And he says, like human fish, and this is my favorite metaphor, like human fish, we're asked to experience meaning in the life that moves through the gills of our hearts. Through the gills of our hearts to find meaning. He says, like human fish, we're asked to experience meaning in the life that moves through the gills of our hearts. And there is nothing to do, and there's nowhere to go. And simply accepting this, these, the gifts of love, we can do everything and go anywhere. And when we go nowhere, we get now here. And all of it is as a rehearsal for the majesty of being held in the hands of grace, forever safe in the arms of love. So yes, we're held by this love. The majesty of being held in this love. So I invite you to feel that right now. That's enough. There could still be loneliness, there could still be anger, there could still be fear. And yet all of this is being held in the arms of love. You know, it's so funny, I was talking about holding Smudge in my arms when she made her transition. And when I had the heart attack, 2.5 years ago, almost 3 years ago in March, I fell on the bed and I landed on baby Speck. She was lying in the bed. And I can remember feeling held by her love. I was just lying on her. The pain was excruciating. And she was licking my face. And what if that's what we get to do for each other? That we get to be there when we need someone to hold us, to lick our face, to look at us with adoring eyes. It's nothing complicated. There's no fixing of anybody else. There's just an embrace. And so this Sunday, we open to the gifts of love, the many gifts of love, a smile from a friend, the wave of a neighbor, the purr of a cat, the galumphiness of an old dog, the running of a pug who couldn't run a year ago, all gifts of love, the unfolding of a love that is what we are, our true nature. This love that we have made a commitment to, we've married this love this Sunday morning. And so when this love leads the way, and it leads us out of something that is untenable, we follow this love, knowing that the law will make the way possible, even when we don't know. We just follow that love. It'll take us from the dance floor to the ministry, to a chair with a mask. And it's all the love leading the way, and the law making the way possible. Dr. Ernest Holmes says we can have as much of this love as we can take. But we can only take, he says, what we can embody. And so I invite you to embody, at the deepest level, this love of the divine. This light of the divine. This love and light come together as you. And just like Albert Einstein, like a generator, it radiates out from us to the world. It's not something we do, it's something we are. It's the work of being, being love. It's the work of being human. It's the work of love itself. And so as we rest in that consciousness, we have arrived in the field of love, a field where words are not necessary, even the idea each other does not exist. And we meet there. That's enough. And then love knows what to do. And we're not attached to the outcome of that love. Love just shows up as what we are. In a field of peace, in a field of joy, in a field of curiosity, and expectancy, we don't get to know what it's going to look like. But we do get to celebrate it as it unfolds with every breath. So I invite you to take a deep inner breath. Give a sigh for the divine. And join with me in the heart salutation by saying to this love that we all share, I honor you.
I honor you.
I respect you.
I respect you.
I love you.
I love you.
You are the sweetest aspect of my soul. The beloved in me bows to the beloved in you. In this sacred space, we are one. And all is well. All the time. We open our eyes, we open our hearts, we open our hands. We love dangerously now. Dangerously. Don't be afraid. Just love dangerously. Pick up your child and smother them with kisses, or your kitty cat, or your puppy dog. Take Maisie out for a walk in the forest and let her run and climb up a tree and play with the squirrels. Anyway, time for masks. Thank you all for sharing your abundance with us. I found some checks in the mailbox. Susan, I saw your check in the mailbox. Thank you very much. And I appreciate all your help and support. See you next week.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org.